Blog Talk Radio.
Welcome to Tribal Wisdom Radio, your marriage support network. Tune in for all things love, marriage, and family. We are devoted to love. Here we go.
Wow. Okay. Well, I am hoping that this is going to work this time. I do have to apologize, listeners, for this difficulty, even though it is not my fault. And I guess I should go on ahead and just reintroduce our guests. Tonight, we are talking with Marissa Grayson, attorney, mom, wife, and step-parent. She's going to be talking to us about the business of co-parenting, which she is the author of the book. So, if you are a blended family, if you are a co-parent, then she's going to share some wonderful things with you right now. I'm going to bring her right in. Marissa, are you there?
I am.
Goodness gracious.
We're here.
I'm not even sure what to do with myself right now. But we're just going to go right into it, and I hope the listeners are able to hear us right now. As a matter of fact, I'm just going to go ahead and tell everyone that we are back on the air in the event. All right. So for those who are listening, I hope that they were able to get through. Otherwise, they'll be able to listen to the archive. So let's just jump right into it, the business of co-parenting. Why don't you tell us a little bit about yourself, Marissa, so that you can give us a reference of how you are very knowledgeable about this particular topic.
Okay. Well, I am a stepmom, as you mentioned before. I have two kids with my husband, and then we also have my stepson who's 10 years old. And basically, I ended up writing The Business of Co-Parenting because not only because I'm a family law attorney and that's where the majority of my practice is focused, but because I have the real life experience on co-parenting and helping, you know, divided families, blended families work things out and work things through so that they can, you know, live in peace and establish a parenting partnership without all of the unnecessary drama. So, you know, we started at a place where it was a very difficult situation. It was very difficult to co-parent. You know, we weren't getting along. We've been through some things. So now we're in a place where we all get along just fine. We talk. We have, you know, we go to parent-teacher conferences together. And the weight that's lifted off of your shoulders when you go from being at that place where there's so much animosity and hostility to a place of peace, it changes your family so much, and your children are so much more stress-free that it's definitely worth taking the time to focus on making sure that you repair or develop your divided and/or blended family.
Wonderful. Why don't you tell us a little bit about your experience, if you don't mind sharing? What is the thing, the element that makes it difficult to co-parent? What was the issue that was breaking down the communication or causing the stress?
Normally, and this applies to our situation too, there's just, you know, when you have two parents who were in a relationship or a, you know, a fling or whatever it may have been, and one of them, at least one of them, is usually still dealing with a lot of emotional issues. Or you have the other one who is just not ready to be a parent, wants to parent at their convenience. So you have two people who have created this child, and you're on a different page. So what one parent wants, the other doesn't want. One parent might know what's best for the child, but they don't care because they're mad at the other parent. So in our particular situation, pretty much all of this applies. You know, there was a lot of animosity specifically between my husband and his ex, and then which naturally brought the animosity with her and I. And, you know, she didn't want to work with me. I just kind of tried to stay out of it. My husband didn't want to work with her. And, you know, at some point, because there's so much to happen with children, with school and extracurricular activities, at some point you have to get to a place where you say, okay, forget the way I feel about you and my reasons for feeling this way. I'm going to have to figure out how to deal with it, get over it, let's talk it out, let me go to counseling, whatever it is that you need to do so that you can move on from the negative feeling so that you can basically start to treat your co-parenting relationship as a business relationship, which essentially takes the emotions out of it. And then everything else, you know, kind of fell into place.
Okay. And so when you said that we're going to discuss this from relevant perspectives, mothers, fathers, and step-parents, should we start with the mother, the father, the step-parent? How do we discuss this from the relevant perspectives?
I think we should kind of start with the mom just because naturally, you know, the majority of mothers have custody. We are seeing more and more fathers having custody and visitation with their children these days. But typically, the mother is the one that has the primary custody of the children. So they have, in a lot of families, have more control over the co-parenting situation because they have the, you know, the custody rights to the child.
And since the mom normally has custody rights of the child, and is that the case with your family? She has custody?
No. In okay. our case, my husband and I, we pretty much have my stepson the majority of the school year. Right now, he spends with her on the weekend. It hasn't always been that way. Before, you know, we alternated weeks, we've alternated days, we've been through custody battles in the court. I mean, you know, it's varied a lot, which is part of the issues with having a negative co-parenting relationship. Because you're battling it out, you're expecting the court system to resolve your issues, and you have to keep changing your child's living arrangement, which may or may not work for your family based on what the court is deciding. So, you know, we had to basically get to a place where we went through this custody battle, the judge made their orders, but then the custody, those particular orders didn't necessarily work for our family. So ultimately, we had to sit down and, you know, come up with our own thing. Now, we pretty much just do what we want. He stays with us the majority of the time. He goes to his mom on the weekends. Her, you know, whenever she's in the area, she'll call and say, hey, I want to come by or I want to come get him. And, you know, we just kind of wing it. But we do still have the orders in place just in case.
Okay. And when it comes to the business of co-parenting, what in the book did you advise based on your experiences?
Well, in the book, I have – well, there's two books right now. I have The Business of Co-Parenting for Moms, and then I have The Business of Co-Parenting for Dads. So each book touches on the different things that mothers go through as well as the things that I see fathers go through and the things that they can do themselves for themselves and for their child to change the dynamic of their relationship. Because part of the problem is that both parents usually want to point the blame at the other parent versus taking a step back and looking at their own situation, reflecting on their own behaviors and figuring out, okay, am I doing everything that I could be doing to make sure that me and my child's other parent have a good relationship and to make sure that me and my child is able to have a good relationship with both of us? Most of the time, if the parents aren't getting along and they take the step back and reflect, they're not doing everything that they could be doing. Because it is a conscious effort. It's conscious work that you have to do. It's a commitment that you have to make so that you can get to a place where you're peaceful. Until you get there, it works. Just like marriages, you know how marriages take a lot of work. So does co-parenting. Mm-hmm. You have to consciously, you know, think about the way you speak to each other. You have to think about the other person's feelings. You definitely, it's a business in a sense.
And you said you wrote one for mom. So what was your advice? For the moms?
Oh, well, advice, there's lots of advice I have. So the first thing that I advise is to make sure that you, as a mom, understand the dynamic of the divided family relationship. And this is something I go over in both books, which basically talks about how even though you and the other parent are separated, you still are a family, whether you want to be or not. And in order for your family to function and your child to thrive, dealing with these two separate households that are technically one family, there are many things that you have to do to deal with the division of your family in order to make sure that your child's best interests are protected. So first and foremost, it's essential for moms to make sure that they deal with the fact that they're not with the other parent anymore. sometimes they don't really care about being with the other parent. Sometimes they're just mad because the other parent has done horrible things to them or because, you know, they just don't get along. So they have to, you know, you have to figure out how to get over it and do what you need to do to get past it so that you can move on, whether that be going to counseling, whether that be going to a co-parenting class, getting coaching, just sitting down, having a conversation. So that would be the first step, is sitting down and recognizing the dynamic of your family and figuring out, okay, how am I going to get over this so that I can move on? The anger, the hurt, whatever it may be. And then the next thing I talk about in, because there are, you know, no father is the same. You have, of course, your deadbeat. You have the fathers who want to be involved, but they don't want to be in a relationship with the other parent. So sometimes the moms have an issue, you know, with the fact that the parent doesn't want to be with them anymore. You have the erratic dads who want to do what I call parent at their convenience, which is just, you know, come by and pick the kid up when it's convenient for them, regardless of the instability that creates for your children. I mean, I talk about domestic violence and the abuse of dad. There's so many different, you know, things that you have to do. And once you understand the type of father that you're dealing with, there are certain actions that you can take to kind of coach that father into being the father he needs to be, and talk about getting rid of the old stuff and, you know, trying to adjust your family with new schedules, new home life, dealing with the new woman, how to deal with your new man and introduce him to your child and to your child's father and to bring him into the situation. And then I also talk about the legal side of, you know, what you need to do to make sure that legally you have some custody arrangements in writing that can be enforced to avoid confusion and to ensure that you have your custody. So,
well, let's talk about
that. I go
that.
Into a lot.
yes, clearly I hear. Let's start with the legal side. Once you know and understand that you and your child's mother or father are no longer going to be together, what's the first thing you should do to, on the legal side, when it comes to going to court or putting, as you said, something together with the court system?
Well, I think the first thing that you have to do is, if you are in a place where you and the other parent just have decided not to be together, but you get along, and then open a custody case. One of you, it doesn't really matter who, open a custody case. They have, in most courts, they have mediation that's required, so you can, it's usually free sometimes, or it's inexpensive depending on, you know, what state you live in. But you open your case, and then you go to mediation, and you tell the mediator what you agreed to, or you hire an attorney to do it if you, you know, have funds to do that, and get your an agreement formalized, which will then you file it with the court, and it becomes a court order. So essentially, you didn't have a judge make your custody decision. You made your own custody decision and made it into an order, so that just in case one day one of you wake up and says, you know what, I'm not giving the child back, I'm mad at him or I'm mad at her, the other parent still has that order that's in place based on what you agreed on and can enforce that and make sure that your child's schedule and stability is not disrupted because one of you decided to do that. So first and foremost, I think don't get along and you're not able to sit down and formalize an agreement. I think it's important to establish, you know, the paternity of your child in the court system, open your case, and file a motion to request that the court make a decision on your custody.
Okay. Let's pull back for a second, because I think it's important for people to know that they can actually formalize an agreement between themselves without getting the court system to tell you how to do it. This is correct?
Right. That's correct. So, and for instance, most courts require that if you are in a custody dispute, that you attend mediation first to see if you can work it out. If you can't work it out, then you proceed with your hearing. But if you don't want the judge to have any say at all, you can go to a private mediator. My company has a private mediation company. There are millions and millions, well, maybe not millions, but thousands of mediation companies that specialize in working with divided families. And you can have someone sit down with you, you know, listen to whatever it is that the both of you are coming to an agreement on. They can draft your agreement for you, file it with the court, and it becomes an order. You never have to see a judge. And that makes your life easy because you know you have that security of having the order But at the same time, you reach this agreement yourself. So that's kind of like my situation. You know, right now we have our own agreement, and it works very well because it's what we agreed to, but we also have that order in case somebody decides to wake up crazy, you know, on either end one day.
Okay. I like having a backup for people that wake up crazy. I think that's an excellent deal.
Always.
And for the parent that does not show up, let's say you were dealing with someone, they're out of your life, they moved, whatever the situation could be, is there a way that you can still put together some sort of agreement with the court system with an absentee parent?
Well, in a situation where the parent is completely absent, you can always go and file for your custody on your own. You file for the full custody so that one day the absent parent can't show up at the child's school and say, hey, I'm daddy, or hey, I'm mom, and I want my child, and just pick them up and leave. So you can always ask for the full custody, and if you get the full custody, you can always, you know, at whatever point you decide you want to allow the other parent visitation, you can allow that at your discretion, but you still have that order that says, I have full custody. Or you can even put, some people have, you know, one parent has full custody with reasonable visitation to the other parent. I don't advise that you do that, you know, because it does create a lot of confusion, because who knows what defines reasonable. But, you know, that's another option, especially if the parent's absentee, so that you can, you know, you can still allow your child to go and see the other parent, but you would have the full custody. The key here is making sure that your child has the stability that he or she needs in their life and doesn't have to deal with, you know, a parent coming around whenever they feel like it, and they're looking forward to every Tuesday and Thursday, mommy or daddy picking me up, and daddy only comes every, you know, third Tuesday out of every 6 months.
Right.
That's not beneficial for your child.
So these are the options. I just want to make sure that the listeners are listening to their options. If you are both able to have a conversation, you can make up the agreement yourself, see a mediator, and have the order put in place. If mm-hmm. the other parent is absent, you can still go to the court, file for full custody, and should the other parent show up, not show up at whatever time, you still have an order in place.
Right.
Okay.
You always want to have an order in place.
Say that again.
Yeah, you got to protect your child first and foremost. And that's how a lot of parental kidnappings happen. You'll have one parent who has been absent for 6 years, and then they get served with their child support papers, and then they decide, oh, okay, well, now I have to pay child support, so let me go pick the child up who's never seen me before and take him or her wherever I feel like it, out of the country, out of the state. And then, you know, that's just opening up a whole other can of worms, because now you got to find your child. You got to get the district attorney to help you get your child back. It's just always, you always want to be proactive, especially when it comes to your kids. So proactivity is the best activity. Always get in order. Even if you and the other parent get along and you don't think that something's going to happen, this is the biggest mistake that parents make. They think, oh, we get along, we're cool, we don't have any issues. They don't think in writing. They just work by text messaging, phone, and email. And then somebody wakes up crazy, and now, you know, now the child's gone. So now we have to rush to try to get some orders in place. And sometimes that can take months. So whoever left with the child just has the child for months, because the court or the police officers aren't going to take the child back if there are no orders that say that, you know, they're supposed to be with one parent or the other.
That's a scary thought. That's a scary thought. But
it
okay. Let's go back to talking about blending this family. You talked about the perspective of the mom. Is there anything else that you wanted to add to that before we move over to the father?
Not in particular. I mean, I pretty much will probably touch in a different way.
Okay. How does it apply to the father?
Which part? All of
any of it? You said that it's pretty much the same thing,
oh, okay.
But it applies to the father in a different way. So you initially mentioned, you know, what if there's erratic behavior, instability, how would
right.
they formalize an agreement, and how would they go about putting something in writing? Is it
okay, so the biggest issue that I have with fathers normally, fathers usually, in many cases, not all, but in many, they have this thing where mom says, you can't see your child, and they say, I want to see my child, and mom says, nope, and they say, okay, fine, and they leave it alone, and they let time go by, and more time go by that they haven't seen their children, and then they're just stuck in this place where they have lost their relationship with their child, and they have to make sure that my, go ahead.
No, I was going to say, in this case, the mother woke up crazy.
Yeah, in this case.
Okay.
Or daddy's been a deadbeat and now decides he wants to come around. And mom's like, nope, I've been doing this for 12 years by myself. I'm not letting you see the child. So there's always, you know, two sides to the story. So I try to give every example possible. So either way, if a father wants to be involved and for whatever reason the mom is not allowing him to, it's important for him to, again, be proactive and take the steps that are necessary for him to get visitation. Even if you've been absent for 5 years from your child's life and you had a reality check and realized, I don't want to be a deadbeat anymore. And this is one thing I talk about in my book for fathers, is how to step. People make mistakes. People make stupid decisions. You know, people are young and dumb and just don't do things what necessarily may be the right way. But there's always a way for you to overcome that if you're willing to. So if you've been a deadbeat, for instance, and now you want to be involved, you just have to take those extra steps that are necessary to do so. If your child's mother hasn't been allowing you to see your child and you haven't done anything about it, you need to do something about it legally. And that would be basically following the same thing that I explained for the mom. You know, if you want to be involved in your child's life and you can't work it out with the other parent, then you have to go to court and file for a visitation or custody if you want custody, depending on the circumstances. So you have to take the steps. Nobody's going to come and knock on your door and say, hey, I heard you haven't seen your child in a few years. I was wondering, you know, if you want some visitation. That's not how it works. And that's where a lot of fathers end up finding themselves on the end where they're not the custodial parent because mom wanted custody. Mom took custody. Mom did whatever she needed to do to make sure that she could have her child and see her child. If dad takes the child and says, mom, you can't see the child, 9 times out of 10, mom is going to do everything she needs to do to make sure she can get her baby back. When it's reversed, on the other hand, fathers don't understand or realize that they have rights as well. They just have to fight for them, just like mom would. And if you're willing to fight for them and you are willing to put in the work that's required to build a relationship with your child and become a good parent for your child, in most cases like that, it's possible to, you know, develop that rapport with your other, to a legal place where you can have time with your child again.
Well, let's bullet point father's rights for a moment. I'm not sure how many there are, but if we had to pick the top five, what are the father's rights?
Well, essentially, father, can you hear me?
Yes.
Okay, sorry. So both parents technically have the same rights to a child. Once paternity is established for a particular child, both parents have the rights to that child. Both parents have the right and the duty to support their child financially, emotionally, physically, all of those things. The difference is that fathers have to take an additional step because you can dispute maternity. You can dispute paternity. You can say, I'm not the father, and walk away. Mothers, on the other hand, don't have that option. They can't just say, I'm not the mama, and walk away. So when it comes to custody, moms don't have to establish in the court, oh, hey, I'm the mom, but fathers have to establish that they're the father. Once you've established that you're the father, again, it's a level playing field. If you can show that it's in your child's best interest that your child, you know, have visitation or be in your custody. So that's the biggest thing, is that fathers, what I try to tell my dad is that when you find out that your child, somebody's having your baby, you need to be ready, willing, and able to file whatever documents are required in your particular state to establish legally the paternity of that child, whether you're fighting for custody or visitation or whatever, whether you get along with her or not, whether you're in a relationship with her. whatever the case may be, you need to file and establish the paternity so that you don't have to wait until the mess hits the fan to decide to try to establish paternity and then try to fight for custody. So if you do that as soon as the child is born or shortly thereafter, then you also need to try to make sure that you have some kind of visitation with the child from as early of an age as possible so that later on when you have to go through this custody dispute, mom can't say, well, he only comes by every other weekend to see the child, so he should only have visitation every other weekend if you want more. Once you've established that you pick the child up on Tuesday, Thursday, and Saturday of every week and every weekend or whatever the case may be, that establishes a status quo for your child that court isn't necessarily going to want to disrupt. So you have to be active and be involved. And whatever your final outcome is, that's the behavior that you need to practice from the jump. Because the more you allow yourself or allow your child or the parents to keep your child away from you, the harder it's going to be for you to have more custody of your child.
Now, in this case, are you speaking of unmarried couples?
Yes.
Okay.
I am. Married couples, normally the court's not going to make any orders related to them unless you're getting a divorce.
I just wanted to make sure that we clarify that because, you know, there are married people who will say, I need to establish paternity. I want to have a paternity test to make sure that the child is mine.
Right. And that's separate because that will be a paternity test outside of the courthouse, or well, all of them take place outside of the courthouse, but outside of a legal case. Probably you're going to want to get a divorce, depending on, you know, whatever. And if that's the case, then your child wouldn't be part of that divorce. But what if the tables are turned? What if you want to get a divorce, but you still want to parent that child because you've been that child's parent for 4 years?
Mm-hmm.
Now you've established the status quo that you're daddy to this four-year-old, and you can ask the court to include you know, this child in your divorce case and establish that you are what they call the de facto parent for the child.
Okay. So now that we've established at least the beginnings, first establish paternity, then start spending time with the child right away, establish a routine.
Right.
And then at that point, if you're getting along, the parents should both sit down and create a document, as you said before, same as with the mom.
Right. If you're not, you know, at that point, even when you file to establish paternity, you can also file a motion to request visitation with your child. And if you're able to sit down with the mediator before that motion comes to, you know, the hearing date, then great. If not, you've already got that motion date on calendar and you can have the judge make some orders. Some orders are better than no orders. So
Yes.
Be proactive.
I see that we have a caller and a question on the line, and we're going to take this call and then come back and talk about the co-parenter's perspective. So, caller ending in 1203, you are on the air with Travel Wisdom. Please introduce yourself.
Hi, this is Corey Rashawn. How are you doing?
Hey, Corey. How's it going?
Good. This is interesting on 2 points. I wanted to throw a loop out there and ask, what would you do, or if you've ever been or had a case where the parents are getting divorced because one found out that they wanted to live the rest of their life in a homosexual relationship, whether it be man and female, and the co-parenting that has happened there. And then there's a situation that I'm thinking about personally. If there are young adults that are having a baby that are not married but living together and have set up home, and we know how sometimes the youth don't know what lies ahead of them, how would an unmarried living couple handle or should handle prior to, God forbid, any separation, the legal rights of the father?
That's a good question. So first, I'll touch on your last question first. This is actually quite common where you have a couple that live together, they're not married, and then something happens and they end up separating. So I recommend as I said before, when you are having a child with someone, if you're not married, regardless of the status of your relationship with that person, it's important for the fathers at minimum to go and establish the paternity legally in court. Now, one thing I wanted to make clear is that in most states, if you sign the birth certificate or a declaration of paternity in the hospital or shortly thereafter the child is born, to establish legal paternity in the court, all it literally takes is filing some paperwork and attaching the declaration or the birth certificate to show that you have already, you know, agreed that this is your child. You don't have to technically go and get a paternity test done in most cases. So that's what you would need to do, because that opens your case up and that puts you in a place where you're already legally established as the father. So if in the event that you split up and your child's being held away from you, then you can say, then you can go and file a motion for the custody, and it's not going to take as long as having to start from scratch and establish the paternity first and then establish the custody afterwards.
Okay. That's good. Okay. So establish the, what is it? You're establishing the...
The paternity.
The paternity.
Establish that you are or you are not, you know, the father in that scenario.
Okay, great. Thank you.
And there was a
two-part
question.
And then for your
second
question, related to one of the parents wanting to, you know, be in a homosexual relationship. In those type of cases, it's really, unless you can show that the homosexual relationship is going to be detrimental to your child, as in, you know, there's some going on, there's some parenting issues going on unrelated to the relationship. The relationship itself is kind of not necessarily considered, especially today in 2014, where, you know, homosexuality and gay marriages are being legalized across the country. So it's really all going to boil down to what's in the best interest of the child, regardless of, you know, what type of side relationship happens. If one has an affair and decides to be with a mistress, they don't focus on the relationship with the mistress in so much as they do what's best for the child. So, yeah, they've moved on to this other relationship, whatever kind of relationship it is, but how is this going to impact the best interest of the child? You could have a homosexual couple that, you know, can raise a family or raise children or, you know, treat children the same way that heterosexual couples do. So they don't necessarily, you know, take that into account. What they might take into account would probably be, you know, the infidelity, because that has more of a moral standpoint. But then again, it's going to reflect on how did that infidelity become a detriment to your child. Has your child been around the mistress or, you know, the other man or the other woman while you were married and they knew you were together? You know, all of these different things. So it's a case-by-case scenario, but because the relationship that's the new relationship is a homosexual one, won't necessarily affect the, you know, the legal standpoint of the parenting, co-parenting situation. Did that answer your question?
Yes, it does. Very good. Very good. Thank you.
Wonderful. Wonderful.
You're welcome.
So we had two wonderful questions, great questions. And Marissa answered them. And if you're just tuning in, we're talking with attorney Marissa Grayson about the business of co-parenting. We've talked about everything from the perspective of the mother, the perspective of the father, and now we're going to move right into the perspective of the step-parent. What exactly is the perspective of the step-parent?
That's funny, because I have not finished the step-parent book, but I can tell you from experience, the perspective of the step-parent, us as step-parents, we face a lot of things that the mom and the dad don't have to face, because we have issues with, one, if we're a blended family, we have our own children we have to parent and deal with. And then, on top of that, now we have this third child or the fourth child or, you know, whatever number child it is, this other child who's not necessarily biologically our child. So they may have, you know, depending on when you're stepping in as a step-parent, they may have been raised a different way. They may have a, they want daddy and mommy to be together. They may be, unruly children. All these things happen and you step into the situation and you don't necessarily know what you're going to get. So on top of that, you have to deal with the other parent who probably doesn't like you just because they don't know you, who doesn't want you to be around their child, even though you're a good person, you have all these things that you have to deal with. And then on top of that, you have to be a spouse to your spouse. So you have to, as the step-parent, you have to look at the situation the same way that other parents do and just figure out, okay, what is my role here? What's going on in this situation? How can I contribute to the situation? So, for example, in my particular situation, when I came around, my husband and his ex weren't necessarily, you know, getting along as much, and I had to find a way to help her feel comfortable with me. So once she became comfortable with me, it pretty much everything just became all good at that point, you know. So it's, again, it takes work, it takes effort, it takes dealing with attitudes, emotions, and situations that you don't necessarily want to deal with. But you have to understand that you don't know what happened in their prior relationship, and you don't know what the other parent's feeling, you don't know what the ex is feeling, and you don't know what the child is feeling or going through. So you have to take all of these things into account and find your place in that family and figure out, okay, how can we make this family work in a positive way so that this child is not feeling like a stepchild and feeling like this is just a chaotic situation to be in.
And what would you recommend a step-parent to do? I know you said that you approached her to try to help her make her feel comfortable about you being around her child, or, you know, what comforts do you have to really deal with?
Well, I think it's important that when you are stepping into a relationship with someone who has children, you have to, first and foremost, a lot of people introduce their children to the next person way before it's at that level. So as a step-parent, I did not even want to meet he was my boyfriend at the time, I did not want to meet his child until I knew that our relationship was more than just, you know, a casual dating situation.
Yeah.
And that to me was a very important step, because before I met, well, not long after I met his child, I then said, you know, she wanted to meet me, I wanted to meet her, and we ended up meeting each other. But our, you know, our good relationship that we have right now was not instant, because even though she met me, we still had our own issues because she didn't like me, I didn't feel like dealing with her, I didn't feel like dealing with nobody. So at one point, you know, at some point I had to sit down and say, okay, we're all in this family, this is one family, how are we going to make this work? You know, you just have to start communicating. And the thing is, you might face a situation as a step parent where the other parent is just like, nope, don't want to be involved, don't want nothing to do with them, don't want them around my child, don't want this, don't want that. And with your spouse, you know, your spouse has to be on the page where they understand, okay, my ex has to have her or his boundaries where they're not able to control my relationship with this new person. And then you have to have your boundaries where you're like, okay, I'm going to be peaceful, and I'm going to treat this child the same way I would treat my own children, and I'm not going to allow this drama to come in to our situation either. And, again, it takes work, literally.
But I was about to say that can't be easy.
It's not easy. You're going to get, I mean, I went through a lot of things, a lot of parents that I work with now. I mean, you go through these things and you just feel like you're taking like a beating, literally, no matter how hard you're trying to be peaceful, no matter how hard you're trying to establish a rapport with this person, they just won't let it go. They won't give in. They're just stubborn. And the thing is that you have to always kill people with kindness. And if it comes to a point where, if every time you see the person, you're smiling, you say hello, and you ask them how they're doing in front of their children, at some point, they're going to have to smile back. You're not just going to keep frowning and having the little stank attitude, whether you're the guy or the girl, just because, you know, just because you want to. At some point, you're going to be like, you know what, this person keeps smiling at me every time, no matter what I do to him or her, she is always like, hey, how you doing? And that's pretty much, you know, where it has to go, and you have to just keep doing it. Keep doing it. Show that you're not stressed, and don't be stressed. And understand that whatever their issue may be with you is not personal. It has to do with them, not you.
Still doesn't sound very easy, I gotta say. Because
it's not. It's a job.
Yeah.
A headache and a job. It's like one of those jobs that you have and you hate, but you go there because you know you have to, but you really don't want to, so you're just, like, tired and frustrated. Yeah, it's like one of them. But it can work out.
Okay.
I have a test about it. It can definitely work out. You just have to work. You have to be committed.
So was this something that you had to go through? You had to work past the walls that she had put up because you were the new person in her child's father's life?
Yeah, that's one of the things. And then, of course, there was still this animosity between her and my husband. So they had their own issues. So you can't, it's kind of hard to have a positive relationship with the new woman if you can't stand the man.
Yes.
You know. So I had to, and me and my husband talk about this all the time, I had to kind of coach him on, okay, you know what, did you really have to have that attitude when you spoke to her on the phone? Did you really have to say this? Did you really have to say that? And I had to kind of be the peacemaker between him and her to the point where, you know, now he checks himself. Well, he doesn't have to do it as much now, but, you know, check yourself, change the dynamic of that relationship first, and then you change the dynamic of mine. Because as soon as she and him got on, you know, a similar page, then it was easy for me and her to eventually start talking. There's only so many football games and basketball games you're going to see me at, sit by me at, and just, you know, not say anything to me like we're strangers.
All right. So that's a good point, that sometimes the co-parent has to be the peacemaker and speak to their new wife or husband about their attitude, about pulling back the attitude, if there is one. And, you know, I would hate to even ask how long that type of relationship takes to really start melding together.
People always ask this question, and it is a long time. I think we've had a completely peaceful co-parenting relationship since 2009. So that's been about 5 years. My husband and I worked together 5 years prior to that. So we've been together almost 10 years, and the first 4.5 were pretty rocky. On and off, not consistently, but now you would never know. If in the room with us, you would never know that we ever had an issue. But it took some work to get there.
Well, we have a question. The question is, so if you are not married, is that co-parenting too? If there's a new girlfriend or boyfriend in the picture that either you're living with or not living with, do you consider that co-parenting?
Absolutely. Anybody that you're going to have a serious relationship with that may be involved in your child's life, they have to step into the role of co-parenting. If you're not getting married and they're going to be around your child, they still are in a parenting role. It's still a very important factor in your child's life, so you do still have to treat it the same way. You know, my husband and I weren't married at first for the first few years. I mean, we were together for about 5 years four years before we got married. So for the first 4 years, I wasn't stepmom. I was just a new girlfriend. But I was a very involved new girlfriend because my husband and I were, you know, seriously dating. We were together a lot. His son was with him regularly. So I had no choice but to step into a parenting role. And you need to make sure that you're new partner is willing to do that, which is why I say it's very important to make sure that when you, whoever it is that you bring into your child's life, whether it's your spouse or not, you need to make sure that y'all are at a place where, you know, they're willing to step into that role and be, you know, not necessarily a parent if you're not getting married, but it's still a parental figure. It's a grown-up that's going to be around your child. So it's definitely important, and it's definitely co-parenting.
Wow. Well, to our listeners, please look out for Marissa's third book. Have you finished the second one? Did you say you finished the second?
Yes, the first two are already out. You can find those on Amazon or on my website. They're definitely there. The one for step parents, I am trying to work on it. I've just been having so much on my plate, but I am almost done. I think I have 2 chapters left. So in the next couple of months, it should be completely published.
Marissa, why don't you tell everyone where they can find you?
Okay. My website is marissavgrayson.com. That's MERISSAV as in Victor, Grayson, GRAYSON.com. And that on that site, you can find my law firm's website. You can find my co-parent coaching website. You can find my, business stuff. Everything is there. So.
Wonderful. Wonderful. And you just mentioned coaching. We didn't even touch on coaching.
Yeah, coaching it's become a very major factor in my business lately. And it's good, though, because I'm keeping people out of court. So coaching is essentially, like life coaching, but I work specifically with co-parents, either individually, and I do have a couple of couples that I work with together. And basically, you figure out what's going wrong and figure out how to tackle it. So if you're one parent and you're dealing with someone and you're frustrated and you're, have your anger and your attitude and whatever, my clients literally call me and say, do you know that this lady just said X, Y, and Z to me, and I don't know what to do? Well, we walk through it. How can you positively change the situation? Because we don't want to take it there and add in more negativity. Let her be negative or let him be negative. What are you going to do to make sure that you're doing everything that you can to positively change the situation? And it does take some coaching if you're not used to that, especially if you're already at a place where, you have so much negative energy towards this person. It takes coaching and work. But it's doable, again. It's just kind of like the friend that you call when you're frustrated and you need advice from. It's that, but it's on a professional level because I can kind of, guide you to make sure that you're not making dumb mistakes because you're mad or frustrated.
And that is a major factor because people normally make an emotional decision out of anger, out of something, and they do something that will negatively affect the whole situation, and you have to start all over again.
Absolutely.
Now we have another question. Asking, after you finish this book, will you be writing a book for teens?
I've had a lot of people ask me that. I'm really thinking about it because I volunteered at a teen shelter and I spoke on co-parenting, and then I realized I don't have a book for teens. And because there are so many teen parents, I tried not to advocate for teens to become parents, of course, but the reality is they do exist. And they will need, insight as well, if not even on a higher level, because you're already immature when you're a teen and you're bringing a child into the world. So I'm definitely considering that, as well as, I do co-parenting classes. So I plan to, open those up to teens, once I go back on tour with my classes also.
Well, that was that question. My question, I read it differently. I was wondering if you can write something for teens, not teens who are parents, but teens who are caught up in that situation of...
Oh, okay.
Right. I think you answered it the way that the person questioned it. I'm just saying on my side, I was wondering if you, had something that you could offer to teens who are in the middle of that situation of caught between co-parents or parents who aren't getting along.
Oh, yes, absolutely, because I am working on, and this is another reason all my projects are taking so long, I'm actually working on a divided and blended family book series for children. So I have, books that are going to be written or in the process of being written for younger children, in little kids' language, when you're first starting to read, or being read to between, 3 and, 6, and then I have, a little bit higher from 7 to 12, and then I will have a series, an older, version of the series for the teenagers who are going through it as well, because teenagers do face something completely different than a 5-year-old is going to face, of course. So, yeah, that's definitely something that I'm working on also.
Excellent. Well, this concludes our talk, our chat, our interview with Marissa Grayson. You can find her on Facebook at Marissa Grayson. Is it Esquire?
Yes. Yes, you.
wonderful on Facebook. As she said, you can also find her on her blog, marissagrayson.com/blog, as well as her website, marissagrayson.com. Are you on Twitter?
I am. I am a natural lawyer on Twitter.
I love that. That's pretty cool. And she has a current promotion going on that you can purchase a signed copy of her book. Where?
They're available directly on my website. If not, you will just have to send an email through my website, and I can give you the discount, because it's not the discount for the signed copy is not, it might not be published online, the one
okay.
I'm offering to your listeners.
Okay. And if you're looking for any coaching, any advice, she also has plenty of YouTube videos chatting and talking to you about all your choices. I think that what you're doing is a wonderful thing. I want to invite you to come back on the show at some point, especially after you finish your other two books.
Thank you. I would love to be here.
Wonderful, wonderful. And hopefully we will not have that crazy time with technical difficulties like we did earlier.
Right.
But
somebody was trying to prevent the message from getting out.
Somebody really needed to hear a little bit of this, and we did get it out regardless of the technical difficulties. So I hope you enjoyed our show. Please come back with us next week. We're going to have another wonderful guest, and we look forward to seeing you. Have a good night.
Thank you so much for joining us tonight on Tribal Wisdom. Stop by bridaltribe.com and visit our media page for full recaps of every show, amazing articles, and free downloads. We have an ever-growing library of knowledgeable guests with vital information for any stage of your relationship. At Tribal Wisdom, we are order and excellence in action, and we are devoted to